Hey Pounders, this is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 30 of the Superfluous Poppycock podcast. And we have a special episode this week because Seth Warren, my good friend Seth, is up in the mountains of Colorado where there is no internet connection. He is taking a sabbatical, got a little hiatus going on. He's up in the snow just doing mountain man things. And there is no podcast available for Seth this week, but I've got a treat for us. We've got James Hollis from B-Ball Breakdown. He and the guys out there have put together a recent post with Jesse Blanchard, actually, at B-Ball Breakdown, a recent post where they compared Kawhi Leonard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. And,
nice. Good pronunciation.
Thank
Good
you,
job.
Sir. Thank you very much. And so we are going to follow up on that and talk with James about a number of other NBA issues and work in a little superfluous poppycock at the end. James, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. And Seth, is it your partner?
Yeah, he's out there, man.
Hey, Seth, I'm gunning for your spot. So if this goes well, you might be locked out. You'll come back and you'll shake the door, and guess what? Nobody's going to be here. I'm taking your spot, baby. Taking over.
That's fantastic. So welcome. Thanks for joining me here. First thing I've got to ask about Giannis is, has he finished growing yet? Do we know if he's done?
We don't, and that's the scary part. You look at him, and it's almost like a nightmare figure when he puts his arms out, because he's so long, and it's amazing. I think even the most optimistic Bucks fans have to be over the moon with how good he's become, because I'm pretty sure no one predicted this.
Yeah. No. Well, first of all, no one predicted it. He was, what, like 6'9 and a quarter when he entered the league?
6'9, couldn't handle, could basically straight line dribble a little bit, couldn't do anything, no touch, and now look at the guy.
No, it's insane. I mean, I was amazed at how often I was seeing his name crop up early in the season, and then I actually watched him play, and I mean, it's jaw-dropping. It's really interesting because a lot of people talk about the way that Kawhi has developed and advanced his game, because what usually happens with superstars is they come into the league offensive monsters and eventually make their way into the two-way player and have some solid, or like in the case of Michael Jordan, some extremely good defense eventually, right? But it,
for sure.
Kawhi kind of did it backwards, and so he's a bit of a... Well, he's a bit of a one-off, right? But when you talk about Giannis, there's so much about him that's a one-off that he's unique on top of unique.
Exactly, and there is a definite parallel, because no one ever thought he'd be a very good scorer, but a lot like Kawhi, he had all the physical tools to be a great defender, and they're both so unique in their own way. And I mean, we're talking two generational type players here.
Absolutely. Like the first thing that you said when I asked you if he was done growing, you said it's so scary. I'm scared for him. I want him to stop growing because not as a fan of a different team, but as a basketball fan, I want him to stop growing. Once you start getting significantly over 7 feet, the human body doesn't take to basketball very well for very long. And all of the best players that go beyond, your Rick Smiths, your Yao Mings, their bodies break down. And I want to see this guy playing for a long time. And so in that 6'10", 6'11", 7-foot range is pretty much where you want to stop. Otherwise, there's issues. Has there been anything that you know of that anybody's talked about concerning that being a problem or an issue as he continues to grow?
You know what? Quick plug alert, sorry. But over at Press Basketball, I do a podcast, the Away Team podcast, and my co-host actually brought up the same point. He just says something about, because of his size, he worries about injuries. Mm. And, I kind of did the sign of the station, the sign of the cross, and knocked on wood, because I don't want to jinx the guy. But I'm gonna let's hope he goes for like Kevin Durant.
Right.
Where he doesn't play, he doesn't play a very, he's not posting up. He's not a big, heavy guy. very long and lean. Let's hope he stays that way, and his joints and his feet can hold up. Because knock on wood, we don't want anything to happen to the guy.
I got you.
But it definitely, I know we've all heard that, you know, the big guy, big men and their feet, especially with his kind of athleticism, the impact. Let's just hope, you know, let's hope he's fine.
Gotcha. So the post that you did with Jesse Blanchard again, it's the pick and roll, Kawhi Leonard versus Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I messed it up that time. Didn't do it as well.
But one of the points
that you made was how Kawhi is not necessarily a system player, but there is a system in San Antonio which supports and enhances his talents. But the issue in Milwaukee with Giannis is how he pretty much has to do everything, or how they lean on him to do everything. Interesting, the game on Tuesday night that the Bucks took from the Spurs and hung with them, he, again, was recovering from his illness and was a shadow of himself, just like Kawhi was when he was coming back from his stomach issues in that first game back against Atlanta. Obviously not who he was, and they held him out of the second half wisely, I think. But the rest of the team really, really stood up. And I was wondering, do you feel like that kind of cut against your point there, or you feel like it underscored it?
On one hand, I can see both points of view. On one hand, I can say, well, playing with him in these first 30-something games has gotten everybody more confident, and they're like superstars in their roles. Mm-hmm. So even with him out, they all stepped up a little bit, and you know, had a all in together kind of thing, and the sums were total, where sums were greater than their parts. On the other hand, maybe you could say, are we underrating Jabari Parker? Michael Beasley was the wild card that night. He exploded against the Spurs, and no one expected that.
No,
Giannis or not. So I mean, the Spurs weren't expecting that. Next thing you know, they got 28 points from him. So and hey, in the NBA, any given night, any team could beat any team. So
yeah,
no, that's such a tiny sample size. I wouldn't say that goes against or for my point. But I mean, hey, the Bucks do have talent there.
No, they've got a ton of talent.
It could kind of prove my point in that the Spurs system, when everything's not whole and working, it can be defeated. But no, I want to make sure I clarify, because that system, the whole system player thing, is such a terrible, lazy argument to use for a player like Kawhi. Because if you just watch him play, the guy's, you know, the way he can score now, he's deadly from mid-range. He can create his own shot. So to call him a system player, it's ridiculous. But the Spurs have built this ecosystem, of nurturing, and like everybody knows their roles, and everyone's so confident because of what they've been doing for years. It does make a difference. But yeah. Kawhi would be great at. I'll say this: Kawhi might not become the player he was anywhere else, even if, no matter what, because he got, I think, the nurturing. Mm-hmm. But now that he is who he is, you put him anywhere, he's going to be amazing.
No, I agree with you, and this is something that I've come back to continually, and it really plays in, I think, in being able to agree with what you said, which is, you take any player off of any team, and there's a really good, I think the chances are strongly for them being a completely different player. Chances are they can be a completely different player in a different system. I'm like,
yes.
Whether you look, I think Jason Kidd and Steve Nash were the first examples as I watched basketball, where you think that you know who their teammates are, and they're traded, and suddenly it's like, wait, hold on, I thought that guy could do boom, 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 right? No, it's just the fact that Jason Kidd and Steve Nash, and of course there are a number of just generational talents that change the game for their teammates in such a way that you can't actually evaluate them with any kind of accuracy when they're playing next to those guys. And I think even though Tim Duncan's not in San Antonio anymore, Pop and the system and those coaches and those guys with all that corporate knowledge, right, that they still are. And so it's impossible to judge anybody outside of that system, or take them out of that system and judge them and say what they would be in a different place, because it just warps reality so much.
That's a perfect term for it. And I always say that there's 29 teams and there's the Spurs. The Spurs are the ultimate outliers in so many different ways. But the only tweak I'd put on what you said is that a lot of guys sure, we don't know what they would have become elsewhere, but once they become that and they go somewhere else and take that knowledge and take that professionalism with them, like Boris Diaw, mm-hmm. I think, you know, Boris Diaw, I think he's great for Utah for the fact that he just knows who he is now. Mm-hmm. George Hill left the Spurs and went to Indiana. I think he was really underrated in Indiana, but the guy's great, and I think he wouldn't have been as great if he didn't go to the Spurs first and become a Spur mentally. Yep.
And look at what he's doing with Utah now. I mean, he's
so good.
Yeah, I think the same thing is possible with guys like Corey Joseph that just continually get better. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start eventually before his career's done. So yeah,
and even if he doesn't, he's such a valuable piece of what Toronto's doing. I had a discussion with a couple Spurs fans when he left. Oh well, he won't be used the same, but he obviously brings. He learned and became something yep. that he probably wouldn't have been if he wasn't a Spur.
He's so under control. He's so valuable because he knows what he is and what he isn't, and he maximizes what he is. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of the San Antonio franchise and the guys that play for them. So one last point on Kawhi versus Giannis is really that role on the team and what their teams look to them for. What do you see as being different between Giannis and Kawhi as far as what they're asked to do, what they're tasked with?
Again, and it was, not to beat a dead horse, but it's not even – I hate using the word system. I think just the styles they both play, the mm-hmm. teams. Giannis has to do so much more as far as a playmaker. And I kind of wondered one day, I wondered out loud, you know, why do we not put the same onus of playmaking on Kawhi as the other superstar wing players? But the answer that's given is – because he doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. The Spurs move the ball, and they know how to find guys where they're supposed to be. And there's never going to be a guy probably average 8-9 assists on the Spurs. That's just not how they play. And that's a perfectly valid answer. So Kawhi is looked to, of course, he's a defensive backbone. He's a timely scorer. He can, you know, he can get buckets almost like as well as anybody else in the league. When it's time just to go one-on-one and get buckets, he can do that. He basically just does whatever they need, a lot like Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan could have been a 25, 28-point game scorer if he wanted to be, mm-hmm. but that's not what they needed from him. And, yeah, so basically they took the soul of Tim Duncan and moved into this stoic kid on the perimeter, and that's what they got now. They got this solid, even-keeled. He fills in the cracks in all ways, and if need be, he can put the team on his back.
Awesome.
While Giannis is asked right now just to actually almost be like a giant Russell Westbrook, he has to kind of do everything for this team for his team to have a chance.
Good stuff. I couldn't agree with you more as far as the way that you look at the Spurs. The thing that I think that really is really interesting about judging somebody's statistics and trying to take them out, like we were saying, is almost impossible. But people do it anyway. We do it all the time. I do it myself. Judging somebody by the numbers they put up and Tony Parker and the fact that he's never been a huge high assist guy, he's had games like that. I always wonder what it would be like if he was running, like say the Suns for a season or two,
and the Clippers.
Or the Clippers even. What would those what would his numbers look like? What would his assist totals be in those guys' environments? It's just an interesting thought experiment. And what is it about? I found myself thinking, what is it about San Antonio that causes those numbers to be so low? And it's the way they move the ball, the way they move off the ball, and and how many different options there are on any play means the ball could go anywhere. It could be in anybody's hands. And because the Spurs really don't acquire anyone who doesn't have good passing skills. And if anybody wants to yell at me about Danny Green, you know, it could be the exception that proves the rule if you like. But I mean,
Jonathan Simmons.
There you go. They require that their guys understand where they need to be there because of what they see from the other four guys on their team and the way that the defense is reacting to them, the way the ball could be in anyone's hands to actually make that last pass from good to great to make that score. It really means that there isn't one playmaker. There's a guy whose job it is to initiate the offense, but not necessarily a guy that's necessary to create the scoring opportunity, because everyone's doing that together, and that really kind of changes the dynamics of what you would expect from any of those players, like you say, like a wing player like Kawhi or a point guard like Tony Parker.
For sure. I mean, I think the key word is trust in San Antonio. They've been doing it for so long.
Good point.
And especially with the big three, and even with Tim Duncan gone, you know, Pop and Tony Parker and Manu, it's all about accountability and trust, and they know and they trust each other that the guy's going to be where he's supposed to be in the offense. And they got each other's back. And it's pretty amazing, man. It is. That's why there's 29 teams in the Spurs.
That, I mean, I love that line of yours. I really like the way that you put that into your story in the pick and roll again on B-Ball Breakdown that you did with Jesse Blanchard. 29 teams in the Spurs, and it's one of those things where one of the things that people bring up all the time from other teams is taken for granted. Just one of those things again is trust and the fact that Kawhi Leonard could have forced that buzzer beating shot. All he had was Matthew Dellavedova in front of him, right? But he made the right pass. He got it to Manu. Manu couldn't hit the shot. But still, it's one of those things that just underscores the trust. So moving on from Kawhi and Giannis, you took Giannis's part in that pick-and-roll piece. But you're actually not you're not a Bucks fan. It's Boston for you, is it?
It is Boston. I'm a Celtics guy, and I've come to a certain peace with what Boston is. That's me.
Oh, okay. So tell me, what do you see that Boston is currently, and in the past?
So I wanted the full on tank once they were moving on from Rondo, and I was a little perturbed and dismayed when they made the playoffs. I know it's not like I'm a terrible fan, and I am. I'm a bad fan. That's fine. But they've become a very quality team, and signing Al Horford was a big deal. Biggest free agent acquisition probably in I can't even know how long. So that's a big deal. But watching what Atlanta, they won 60 games a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and then last year they struggled, but then they got mopped up by the Cavs in the playoffs again. Mm-hmm. And this year they were about, you know, maybe who knows how close they were to trading Paul Millsap and blowing it all up, because I think they look at the landscape and realize that they can't do anything. They're not going to beat the Cavs, and Toronto, you know, probably is too good to. And that kind of made me, it was a sobering moment, because I kind of thought that's going to be Boston in a couple of years. Because they're really good. They're really good, and they have good rotation players. Al Horford, to me, I call him he's not a star, he's a lubricant. He's an offensive and defensive lubricant. He's that guy kind of, he's almost like a power forward form, a lesser scorer, a power forward, less potent offensive Kawhi, where he kind of just does everything at a high level, but he's not great at anything. While Kawhi is actually great at some things, that's why it's less, no, mm-hmm. not the same impact. But and Isaiah's a microwave scorer. He went off again tonight, and he's amazing. But he's flawed defensively, and he's 5'8", and they're going to be good, and they're going to beat a lot of teams and have some wins that they shouldn't have. But I think when the rubber meets the road, unless they make a big move or they can get another big name free agent, which is kind of unlikely, I think this is, you know, they're going to get better, but they're not up echelon. So Boston's going to be a good team. They're going to be fun to watch. Isaiah's a lot of fun. I think he's going to get his $25 million maybe next summer or the summer after from us. And I'm at peace with the fact that you can be a good team and not be a contender, and that might have to be okay.
Yeah, well, with the history of the Celtics and the pride of that franchise, just being able to get back to the point where you guys are regularly in the playoffs – and you have a chance to sign a free agent is huge. But I don't know. I mean, Danny Ainge still has a lot of pieces at his disposal, right? So he's done a great job of identifying talent up to this point. I think it's great to be able to come to terms, like you said, because there's nothing like continually unfulfilled expectations, I feel like, that really crushes the heart of a fan. And recognizing what your team is and what it's capable of. Go ahead.
My thing is, I remember just a few years ago when they ruled the East, and they were formidable, and teams feared Boston because they were so good. I remember that, and so that's what I'm pining for again. But I guess two summers ago, when, you know, Ainge had the war chest, and there's all this talk of these assets and who they make a move for, it seemed like the sky was the limit, but seeing how he handles these assets and how, you know, Jaylen Brown's already he used up what, 3 or 4 first round picks last year, and he kept them, and that's those are bullets in the chamber. And, you know, Isaiah and Crowder and Bradley are a year deeper to those contracts that were so valuable, and still valuable, obviously, but everything has an expiration date, and as soon as you make those picks, the picks lose value because it goes from all this potential to being, all right, now you got this rookie that can't do anything, and who knows how good he's going to be. So It's yeah. I was living some pie in the sky kind of dreams a couple summers ago, and then last summer whatever, and now I'm just like, all right, I'm content to be good. We'll be very good.
Yeah, man. I you know, I grew up in Houston, and you know, my Pounding the Rock readers and the Superfluous Poppycock listeners, they're familiar with my history. I grew up in Houston, so I was a Rockets fan growing up, and I hated those Celtics, man. And 81 and 86, just crushing, just a heartbreaker. Those teams were so incredibly good, and so, and I had a lot in common with the Spurs, actually, with the big three, and with always making those extra passes, doing so much with ball movement and heady play and really good defense and
confident and tough and exactly. Just deep. Oh yeah, they were great teams. And then the last iteration of the championship Celtics, you know, Kevin Garnett. I mean, we're talking about Kevin Garnett. I think a lot of people don't understand, maybe especially a lot of the younger fans don't get how great Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce were that those first couple years until age started catching up with them.
Man, they did. I remember the Spurs going up and playing them and having a really good offensive season. Maybe it was 2011, maybe leading into 2012. And just not being able to do anything. It was like running against quicksand against that team.
That was their modus operandi. They would let you have a little rope early, and then you might it's a close knockdown drag out, and they just walk you down and wear you down, and then by after the half, teams would be left wheezing and gasping, and they would just execute.
Yeah, just an amazing team. So moving on from the Celtics, I want to talk about this season specifically. It seems pretty top heavy this year, but I wanted to get your take on what you see as the best of the best, and whether you think there are any dark horses that can make some noise in the playoffs this year.
I do. It's funny because I remember, and I know you've heard it too, obviously, all the talk of, oh, Golden State ruined the league by getting Kevin Durant. It's going to be, it's going to be Golden State, Cleveland in the finals. Who cares anymore? I don't want to watch. But it's been very compelling watching them try to come together. And, chemistry is a fickle thing, even though I don't think they have a problem. But they look a little vulnerable sometimes. That's good. But Golden State, the Clippers, I'm not sure. You know, we haven't seen them whole and healthy in a while. We've got to see what they look like with Blake back. And there's still issues with them, and their bench is very Jekyll and Hyde. The Spurs, obviously, always under the radar somehow. It's amazing. I'm raising my hand. You can't see me, but I always do it. I always kind of think, okay, Golden State, who's next? You know, and then finally, I'm like, the Spurs. Always the Spurs. I somehow overlook the Spurs, but they're elite. Obviously, the numbers are there. They're beating guys. The home thing with them is kind of weird, and maybe me and you could talk about that some other time. But yeah, they're dropping a lot of home games for some reason.
Yeah, it was weird. There were Danny Green was out early with a hamstring or quad, with a training camp issue, and then Tony Parker was hurt in the very first game of the season against the Golden State Warriors, who tried to play through it, and so they had some pieces missing, and they had brought in seven new guys for the first time and since 2001, I want to say. And so they were trying to put some mix together, and they didn't have enough of the old guys there to help them out, and they just stumbled a few times early. But honestly, outside of those three losses, you've got one early that I think was maybe kind of legitimate, and then this most recent one against the Bucks. So that's what, four or five games, and it looks really weird. But I really don't count three of those, just because the team was still coming together and wasn't healthy.
Yeah, I mean, and we know, like, the Spurs are, maybe people don't consider them in the same class as Golden State, but I mean, the point is they're going to be there till the very end. When they lose in the playoffs, everyone's going to be surprised no matter what, if they lose in the playoffs. So yeah. The Spurs definitely are, as good as Golden State is, I think the Spurs are one team that could, you know, give them a run. They with Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, two great perimeter defenders like that, anything can happen in a seven-game series. Out east, it's Cleveland. And Toronto's playing great, but until I see it, and I know LeBron James, just knowing he's the ultimate cheat code, it's hard to bet against them. So yeah. It's, you know, Kawhi, Kyrie's looking amazing. He's went next level, and people. It's weird, all these articles I'm seeing about him being overrated. Because
how can you dog somebody for so long, like the press has, and essentially say, yeah, the only reason he's any good is because everybody's focusing on LeBron James, like they did pretty much all the way through last year, right? Mm-hmm. And then him come out and have a really, really solid series, even a pretty good series defensively in the finals. have the game winner, have the championship winner in game seven, and then suddenly become overrated. It just makes no sense to me.
Jeff Van Gundy made a very good point on one of the broadcasts when he said this trend now of trying to put a number on everything in basketball kind of kills the joy. And that's what I feel like it's with Kyrie, because all they're doing is breaking down his numbers and his efficiency numbers and his box score plus minus. But if you watch the guy play, sure, is he as good as Russell Westbrook or Steph Curry, and can he carry an offense? We haven't seen him do it, and that's fine.
He's
starring in his role, and he's not the same guy he was 2-3 years ago. So maybe if something happened to LeBron, would he step up? Who knows? But the point is, we don't have to see that. Mm-hmm. He's incredible. So in the East, as good as Toronto's really gelling and playing well now, but as we all know, playing well now it doesn't matter. You got to play well in March, April, May. So. Until they challenge and they push Cleveland to seven games, I'm not gonna believe it. Dark horse, I do have one, and I'm saying it all summer. The one team that they can go big or small. They're deep and they're young, but they still have vets. The Utah Jazz. I really think the Utah Jazz, when healthy, 100%, not 100%, but healthy, all hands on deck. Even if Golden State drubbed them, was a couple weeks ago, and they beat the brakes off them. I think when healthy and everyone's on point, locked in, with that size, and we see that Golden State struggles a little bit with size and physicality, I think they can give them a good run.
No doubt. I'm a little bit smitten with that Jazz team. Obviously, you've got the ex-Spurs in George Hill and Boris Diaw, so the heartstrings are there for me as a San Antonio guy, but... goodness, I mean, I just love the way they're put together. Love the Stifle Tower, that their all around guy is just man. I just drool over him like crazy.
I want them to get healthy.
It's the weirdest thing,
right? Three games and somebody else goes down. It was a turf toe, and there's somebody got poked in the eye, a concussion. I just want them to have a good 20-game stretch of health so we can see what they really are. And that Cleveland game the other night was great. That's amazing. That's what I want to see.
I know. To see them come through like that, and if they can get healthy and actually see where the strength of that team is with a solid rotation and Brendan Hayward out there, playing off of guys and making himself available, just love him so much. That would be a lot of fun as a basketball fan to watch that happen, because it would be great to see somebody again make a ton of noise in the playoffs that wasn't expected in this year, when it was supposed to be Golden State and everybody else at a second tier, which is just no fun. It's no fun to see that. You mentioned LeBron James and the ultimate cheat code. I want to ask you real quick. What do you think, since you're a fan of the East and watch these teams more often than I do, how much longer do you see him being able to play in his prime and extend his prime out? You think he's got another 3 or 4 years?
I mean, it's crazy, because this is year, 13 for LeBron?
Mm.
Right? And, I mean, it's 13.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. A long NBA career is 15 years, and he's at 13, and he's still performing at this level. So obviously he's that freak of nature outlier where we can't, you can follow any kind of projection arc, career arc you want to, and he's not gonna fall under it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my thing is I can see him transitioning to more power forward as he gets a little older and starts losing that bounce. And let's say they move on from Love and get some kind of bouncy big guy center, or some guy can shoot a little bit to play alongside him who can block shots. And now he's playing more power forward, and now Kyrie's in his prime. I mean, who's to say he can't give you, 24, 8-8 until he's 36, 37. who knows, man? It's scary. It's I was asking this question about LeBron 2 years ago, and I'm thinking, yeah, he's starting to slow down. You remember that there was pictures of him laying on the sideline on his back?
Yep.
Because he was having back problems. Mm-hmm. Oh, those back problems start, they don't go away. Well, except unless you're LeBron James, because now he's fine again. So yeah. Whatever I keep thinking about LeBron, as far as, you know, an ordinary mortal, he keeps crashing through that ceiling. So, yeah, it's scary because any team, and that's the thing about the East, right? Teams want to build and get good, but they look at Cleveland, and I don't know what the point is, because right now you're not going to beat Cleveland.
No, and as long as LeBron James is in the East, what is this? We're staring down the barrel of 7 straight finals teams from the East led by LeBron James.
That's just unthinkable.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that he can bounce from team to team and make that happen, and I mean, it's amazing. That would be so interesting, though, wouldn't it, to see him? I mean, everybody, the Karl Malone comparison to LeBron James that I've heard over and over is, you know, I mean, you put Karl Malone, you put a guy in Karl Malone's body and give him handle and you know, and speed. And that's LeBron James. But it would be so interesting at this point to see him go down into the post, and as maybe some of that agility goes away, and obviously, right, Father Time is undefeated.
It is. He's going to catch him sooner or later. Yeah.
Right, eventually. But to see the way that his game could evolve like that would just – is frankly, I just find that fascinating.
I mean, imagine if he just, you know, spends the time working and he realizes legs are going, and he develops like a knockdown – 18-footer, so he can work from the elbows extended and just, you know, catch and look for guys to pass to and then back his guy down. It's exciting, and I think we actually saw a flash of what might be to come when they played Milwaukee, and Giannis beat him up pretty good, and there's nothing LeBron can do. And I was wondering to myself, was that his first feeling of mortality? Mm. When as LeBron James, he was trying to stop someone and do something, and he couldn't do anything about it. I think Giannis gave him like 35, 9, and 7 that night. So I was wondering if that was, you know, that's a little off topic, but it was fun to watch. But yeah, LeBron James is, every time we think, you know, I guess he's kind of done or he's peaked, he shows us something else. So
yeah, no doubt. He's definitely, I mean, the superstars are those guys that can see holes in their games or see a talent that they could add that could change the dimension or add something to the team that they're lacking and take them to the next level. And then they just go out and will themselves, put in the time and will themselves into being able to do that thing that they've never shown the ability to do before. And he's definitely in that category. So we've passed the 30-minute mark here. We're winding things down. I wanted to give you the opportunity to promote anything else that you haven't been able to talk about yet.
Not much to promote, man. I'm enjoying my time over at B-Ball Breakdown, and I do a podcast over at Press Basketball, the Away Team Podcast. Me and Sporting Phil, we talk basketball for, you know, every week, and yeah, just, you guys check me out on Twitter at @JHolisHoops, and that's it. Basketball never sleeps. It's all we do is talk basketball over there. So
basketball,
I really appreciate you having
sleeps.
Me on, man. That's
love
it, man. Basketball never speaks.
I love
basketball
it.
Basketball never sleeps. Thanks for having me on, man.
You bet. So we've got our last segment that we do. It's the Superfluous Poppycock. Do you have any unnecessary foolishness that you'd like to point out in the league?
This grinds my gears so bad, man. And I've been – it's worst. It's the worst I've ever seen it this year. And
I can hear you winding up.
It accumulated the other night. Charlotte, I think they were playing Houston, and they were up most of the game, and then it came down to like a last shot. Frank Kaminsky catches the ball top of the key, and he pump fakes for some reason when he's wide open, and the guy comes flying out at him, and he leans to the side and jumps forward and tries to get contact and throws up this stupid shot. Players hunting for fouls and not trying to score. It's you know, there's always been a little veteran wily trick that guys can pull, but this year it seems more than ever I see it 3 or 4 times a game where guys come off a screen or they, you know, they got a guy on their hip and they're going and they try to draw the contact, they throw up this stupid shot that doesn't have a chance to go in. Mm-hmm. And then they don't get the call, and it looks like, and you wonder if this guy ever played basketball before, because the refs, I'm glad the refs have stopped, but my favorite player in the league, but he does it like once or twice a game. And it just, they throw up the worst shots. And Chris Paul's really bad about it. And to see Frank Kaminsky have a chance to win this basketball game with a clean basketball shot that was wide open and try this and with the game on the line, and he bricked it pitifully. Death, I hashtag it death to foul hunting. I want guys to stop hunting for fouls and just play basketball. And I get it. Sometimes you want to get a little contact, but it's outrageous. With the game on the line, Frank Kaminsky pump faked and then leans to the right and tries to jump into the guy, and the guy dodged it, so he just threw up a stupid shot. And I'm thinking, you know, that's ridiculous. So foul hunting is a thing to me that's just absolute superfluous poppycock.
Good stuff. I think my superfluous poppycock this week is, I got to call Derrick Rose, just disappearing, and the team not knowing where he is. And of course, yeah, he got fined, and he said it was a family issue. But I mean, he said he needed space to himself, and and that's an interesting. Well, it's an interesting comment from a guy who's under contract, whose job is to show up, right? And I mean, like in my own job, if I feel like I need time to myself, I've got a personal business allowance, right? I got PBA that I can call, but my boss requires, right? My job requires that I let them know that I'm going to be taking that, so that they can make plans and they can, you know, still make the business work. And I just thought that was so interesting. You know, he said things happen. And I just,
what does that even mean?
That's not an explanation. That's not even an excuse, right? An excuse is the dog ate my homework.
My phone fell in the toilet. You know, my battery was dead.
That's something. Things happen. What you mean, like things like you not calling and not texting and not emailing and not telling anybody where you were going to be that was then going to. Yeah, that doesn't work. So Derrick Rose going AWOL for a game when he's paid millions of dollars a year to show up to play a game. That's my superfluous poppycock for the week.
Can I get a bonus question for you right now?
Yeah. Go for it.
It's a two-parter.
All right.
Where would Derrick Rose fit next year? And how much do you think he should get paid? Not should he get paid. How much do you think he will get paid? Because I know what he should get paid, but how much will he get paid?
Yeah. You know, his abilities have fallen off quite a bit since those knee injuries and since his time in Chicago, you know, pulling in the MVP. So how much should he get paid or how much will he get paid?
Will he? Because we know he's going to get more than he's worth.
Okay. So I think he's going to get between 12 and 14 million.
Oh.
And I think he's going to wind up in Portland.
No way.
Can you imagine him in Portland?
No way.
No.
Seriously, you don't.
No. How about Orlando could throw him a contract? Yeah.
Probably. I was thinking Philly.
Oh my goodness.
They got nothing to lose. 2 years. Give him max. Even I think he might get over 20, and they could. You know, they have nothing. They don't care. Give him 2 years of 25 million.
Because all their guys are still getting better.
Yeah, and guess what? Even with the two picks they get this year, those point guards are gonna be ready. They're not NBA ready yet. Mm-mm. So. Hey, Derrick Rose will put butts in seats. He'll make his money. He can maybe even show that he can lead and teach the guys or whatever. Or Jersey, I was thinking. So, but either way, I think he's gonna get upwards of 20 million.
Oof! Wow.
He doesn't deserve it. But I think he doesn't.
And I think this year in New York is gonna open some eyes to just how limited he is. Because there's one thing when you stick in the same team where everything is falling apart like Chicago, but then you go to New York, and then again, he's a net negative, right? He's a net negative for that team right now.
He is. But again, there are people who do look and see he's averaging, what, 17 and 6, and he's averaging 17, 4, and 5. Just shooting numbers aren't terrible, shooting 44%. So, and he's played most of the games. There are people who look at that, and they think that Derrick Rose is a quality player still.
Man, I hope none of those people are running an NBA team, because I maybe I have too much faith in the way that advanced statistics are making their way into the front offices of teams. But man, if he pulls in 20 next year, then I think I'll have to shed a tear on that behalf. I guess the next question is, how many games will he go AWOL for?
I can't believe they didn't suspend him. I thought he should have got suspended for a game.
That was pretty. Well, I mean, it's completely limp, right? I mean, the point is that these guys are employees; they're not the bosses.
Yeah, but I guess when they're making millions and people, you know, come to see him play, it kind of blurs that line between who's in charge. And
no doubt,
we know that the Knicks are kind of a mess, so it is what it is.
I guess it fits right in there with Phil Jackson, Zimmeister.
Welcome to the circus.
And that'll do it for this episode, Pounders. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.